Dr. William Luther Pierce on Understanding Our Enemies, 1996.
Hello. We talked a couple of months ago about the exploitation by the government and the media of black church burnings. We discussed the way in which the Clinton administration and the controlled news media were claiming these burnings were the work of organized white racists without a shred of evidence to support their claim. I pointed out in my earlier broadcast that it was possible that a couple of boozed-up Kluxers might have started one or two of the fires, but that as many blacks as whites had been arrested in the burnings, that collecting insurance money was a more likely motive than racism, and that it was very unlikely that any organized white group was involved. As time passes, it becomes clearer that our analysis of the situation was on target, and that of the government and the media was not. Sure enough, the government has arrested a couple of Kluxers for burning two churches, and sure enough, they've been unable to find any white racist conspiracy, no matter how hard they've tried. I suspect the issue of burning black churches will now fade quietly into the background, just like a thousand other phony issues before it. Another of these phony issues was the painting of swastikas on the barracks doors of several black soldiers' rooms at the Army's Fort Bragg in North Carolina a few weeks ago. The politicians and the media raised another big hullabaloo about white racism in the military and called for a new crackdown on what they like to call hate crimes. The military brass were so panicked by the media fuss that white soldiers were confined to their barracks while the matter was being investigated. When it turned out that two black soldiers had done the swastika painting, the issue quietly faded away. The people in the media who had been making the biggest fuss about white racism before the two blacks were caught weren't even embarrassed. They weren't even embarrassed. They just moved on to another phony issue and kept beating the drums about white racism. Now, one of the reasons why these media people weren't embarrassed is that many of them belong to a race which is biologically incapable of feeling shame. And the ones who don't belong to that race have trained themselves to think and behave just like their Jewish bosses. That's one of the reasons for the shameless behavior of the controlled media. The more important reason, however, is one that I mentioned briefly in my earlier talk with you. The criminals in the government and in the media who have been lying to us and taking advantage of us and wrecking our society for so long now are desperate to keep normal, decent, working white men and women morally disarmed, to keep us on the defensive, to keep us feeling guilty and confused. Because they know that if we ever begin thinking clearly, if we ever take stock of our situation, if we ever decide to straighten out the mess they've made of things, there will be hell to pay. They know that if white Americans ever wake up and get their act together, most of the media bosses and the politicians won't live more than a day or two before they're hunted down and dealt with. Let's look at the details of what's happening. I talked a little about this earlier, but we need to go over it again and again until everyone understands it. One of the things we talked about before was that it's not just the media criminals and the politicians who want to keep us morally disarmed. It's the whole Clinton coalition, including the ones who vote Republican. It's all of the freaks and the perverts and the minorities who see their own interests tied to the status quo. It's everyone who can't make it on his own in a normal, healthy society and so depends on the government in one way or another. It's the members of the welfare class who've come to believe that they really deserve to be supported by the rest of us, and who realize that they'll be strictly on their own and will have to either work or starve if the productive people ever reassert themselves. It's the crazed feminists who are afraid that they won't be able to be Air Force generals or military school cadets or top corporate executives if the government's drive to ban traditional sex roles is halted. It's the homosexuals and other degenerates who depend on a police state to force people to tolerate their behavior. It's the members of all the non-white minorities, the blacks and the mestizos and the Asians and the rest, who know they'll be sent packing to live among their own kind instead of continuing to drag us down into a multiracial and multicultural and mongrelized chaos. All of these people have an instinctive understanding that they have to keep us feeling sorry for them, feeling guilty for wanting to be rid of them, feeling too confused to look out for the interests of our own people, our own civilization. They know that if we ever regain our wits, their goose will be cooked. Finally, there's one other bunch of people who have an interest in keeping normal, working white men and women confused with lies about black church burnings and swastika-painted barracks doors. Those are the liberal trendies who grew up during the Vietnam era and now are heavily entrenched in the government, the media, and the educational establishment. During the Vietnam conflict, the Jewish leaders of Students for a Democratic Society, Americans for Democratic Action, the National Student Association, the Student Mobilization Committee, and 100 other leftist organizations were using the war as a pretext to turn American society upside down. These groups had virtually taken over the university campuses in America because the university administrators were afraid that they would be accused of anti-Semitism if they took a stand against them. And the trendy airheads on the campuses, who had been spoiled rotten by a permissive upbringing, easily fell for the propaganda of these organizations, which essentially told them that they could do whatever they wanted to and had no responsibility to anyone or anything. In particular, they could avoid military service and continue smoking dope, partying, and going to rock concerts. These were the Bill Clinton types, the rotten, selfish little bastards who got a big kick out of parading around with Viet Cong flags and thumbing their noses at mommy, daddy, and their country. Not all of them grew up to be chosen president of the United States by the media and the political bosses, but they did grow up to have a powerful grip on our schools and other institutions. They are still irresponsible. They are still essentially hedonist in their outlook. They still believe that they should be able to get away with anything so long as the government, now in their hands, won't let mommy and daddy spank them for it. Of course, that's just a figure of speech. These liberals now approaching middle age aren't really worried any longer about being spanked for making mud pies or smoking dope or having Viet Cong flags in their dormitory rooms. But they are worried that if normal, decent, responsible white Americans ever get the upper hand again, the aging liberal trendies will be dragged out of their offices and their condos and their country clubs and beaten to within a quarter inch of their lives for the mess they've made of things, for what they've done to our world, to the heritage that our ancestors struggled and bled to preserve. They're worried that a lot of them will end up swinging from the end of a rope. And believe me, that's a well-justified worry. So all of this is why we keep having our faces rubbed in white guilt with phony white racist conspiracies to burn black churches or intimidate black soldiers with swastikas. This is why we're lied to by the government and the media. This is why Bill Clinton wants to shut down radio programs which are critical of the government. This is why the media folks become hysterical whenever new signs of popular opposition to the government become visible, whether in the form of a terrorist bombing or a group merely wanting to be left alone, like the Branch Davidians or the Montana Freemen. It's why we have a major assault underway on the First and Second Amendments by left-wing academics who want to limit what we can say and also take away our means to protect our right to say it. It's why any questioning of even the most far-fetched Holocaust claims, or any comment about the Jewish control of the mass media, or any scientific inquiry into racial differences, or any public statement which might offend feminists or homosexuals or non-whites, brings such an intolerant, closed-minded, and spiteful response from the liberal Jewish media government sector. It's an attack on their coalition. It may be a sign that we're waking up. Remember what they did to poor Marge Schott when she made a couple of comments they deemed offensive? They really are afraid that we'll wake up. They really are desperate to keep us confused, demoralized, and on the defensive. They know that if we ever go on the offensive, they will be finished. Our job, the task of American Dissident Voices, is to wake our people up, to help them straighten out their thinking, to give them moral courage again, and to prepare them to take the offensive. That is a formidable task. The majority of our people have let themselves be convinced that a normal, healthy, instinctive racial attitude, the desire to live and work and play and mate with one's own kind, what our enemies call racism, is wicked. Our enemies call this healthy, natural racial attitude a sickness. They have been able to make many of us feel guilty for having such an attitude, much like the prudes of a century ago were able to make many people feel guilty for having a normal, healthy interest in the opposite sex. So we can understand the motives of the elements who are destroying America and destroying our people, the motives of the filthy creatures who are deliberately sapping the will of our people to resist this destruction by pumping poisonous propaganda into our minds. We can understand their motives. They want to live too, but their way of life is to suck out our life blood, to cling like leeches to our society and warp it to fit their needs. And they know that they can only do this by keeping us confused and morally debilitated. They know that if we become morally healthy again, they will die. We can understand that. We can even understand how they accomplish their destructive work. We can understand both the organizational aspects and the psychological aspects. It's easy enough to understand why the controlled media are so ferociously determined to keep the flood of third world immigrants pouring across our borders, why they become hysterical whenever anyone suggests restricting immigration, and why the government refuses to do more than make the flimsiest pretext of guarding our borders. Every Mexican and every Haitian and every Vietnamese and every Chinaman who sneaks into the country is a new member of their coalition against white America. There are other aspects of this numbers problem too. Every sexually confused kid who grows up in one of these modern, mixed-up families without strong sexual role models and ends up being lured into the homosexual lifestyle is a new recruit for their coalition. That helps us understand the hatred that the Clintonistas have for the traditional family and for traditional sex roles. It's the psychological war our enemies have been waging against us, which we must address before we can hope to do much about their efforts to outnumber us and divide us, however. We white people have a fatal compulsion to be nice, to try very hard not to give offense or hurt the feelings of others. Actually, This compulsion wasn't a bad trait in past centuries when our society was racially and culturally homogeneous. It's a trait which serves as a social lubricant, minimizing conflict and abetting cooperation. But it really has been used against us by Jews and other non-whites now living among us. There are far too many of our people who are bright enough to understand what's happening to our world, but who just can't bring themselves to say or do anything about it because they've let themselves be persuaded that that would be bad manners. It's rude to talk about racial differences because if a non-white overheard it, his feelings might be hurt. It's not polite to discuss the effects on our society of Jewish media control because such a discussion is offensive to Jews. Does it hurt our feelings to be called honky or goy or gringo? Not really. We listen without objection to the most scathing criticism of our people and our ways by aliens, but we are afraid to criticize them for fear of hurting their feelings. Republican presidential candidate Bob Dole has told us that he won't even use the word alien in talking about the immigration problem because he's afraid that would be offensive to aliens who don't like to be reminded of their irregular status. It will be a real struggle for some of us to put racial survival ahead of politeness. In addition to convincing us that any discussion of the real issues we are facing would be bad manners, our enemies have made good use of the psychological trick of pretending to be weak and helpless because they have discovered that we have a trait apparently unique among the races of man of feeling sorry for those who are helpless. When we are confronted with an obviously dangerous and aggressive enemy who scowls and threatens as he advances toward us with a weapon, we know what to do. But if that same enemy shuffles toward us with his eyes averted and his hat in his hands, begging for a little welfare, we feel guilty for even thinking about chasing him away or killing him, no matter how strongly we would like to avoid his company. Try that trick in Africa or Asia, and it will get you killed in a hurry. But in Europe and North America, it works. Some of us are so overwhelmed with feelings of racial guilt after being pumped full of propaganda about how our ancestors mistreated the defenseless brown man and the helpless black man and the poor inoffensive Jew, that we have become moral basket cases and can't defend ourselves today, even when we can see all around us the depredations that non-whites are making against our people. And so now we can understand the reason for all of the headlines in the controlled media about hate crimes by white skinheads against poor, inoffensive non-whites in our cities today, and for all of the Hollywood films about the way the wicked white settlers abused the unsuspecting and unresisting Indians a century ago. Now we can understand why they invent white racist conspiracies to burn down black churches. They play on our reluctance to give offense, on our inability to resist an aggressor who pretends to be helpless, and on the ease with which we can be morally paralyzed by artificially induced feelings of guilt. These are powerful weapons they use against us. They use them with diabolical skill. And all of us have felt the powerful temptation, even when we understood what they were doing to us, just to be nice, not to resist, not to oppose them. What they are doing to us is almost hypnotic. It is so easy for you to remain asleep, they tell us. It is so easy just to let us have our way, their propaganda tells us. It is so easy just to let your people die. Let your civilization fall into ruin. Let us have it all. No one will blame you for that, they smile. That's the polite way. Don't resist us. Just let us have it all. That's the way to soothe your guilt That's the way to avoid criticism. That's the nice way. Over and over and over again. That's their message for us. Don't resist. And then more guilt-inducing stories about the Jewish Holocaust, about burning black churches, and about white terrorists. And then heartwarming stories about struggling third world immigrants working hard to achieve the American dream, over and over and over. Yes, we understand these tactics of our enemies. Understanding them is not the same as overcoming them, of course, but understanding is a necessary first step. What we must do after we have wiped the sleep from our eyes and flushed our enemies' poisonous propaganda from our minds is reestablish contact with our instinct, with our inner wisdom. That wisdom will tell us that the guilt we feel because our ancestors did what they thought was necessary to protect our people, to gain new living space for us, and to build the civilization that we inherited for them, that is false guilt. One does not become guilty for doing anything which is necessary or helpful for the survival or progress of one's people in this competitive and unforgiving world. Guilt comes from failing to accept the responsibility we have to our own people. Guilt comes from letting ourselves be deceived by our enemies. Guilt comes from losing the struggle for survival. And our inner wisdom also will tell us that we can be polite once again. We can concern ourselves with not hurting anyone's feelings once again when we have cleared away the last threat to our people and once more are living only among ourselves. And with this wisdom guiding us, we will be immune to the deceit of our enemies and we will overcome them. Thanks for being with me again today.